Marilyn Heck. Marilyn Heck and Fred.
I'm from Canada, water. Dick Poop.
Family members.
I can hardly take care of myself.
Come on, this is your responsibility. Grow up.
Hey, music?
I'm your sister.
All she's got now is you.
Calm down, it's okay.
Hi there.
I don't know what I'm doing. I don't.
Music. It's your friend Ebo.
Hello and welcome to the This Had Oscar Buzz podcast, the only podcast that does not trust an adult named Scooter. Every week on This Had Oscar Buzz, we'll be talking about a different movie that once upon a time had lofty Academy Award aspirations, but for some reason or another, it all went wrong. The Oscar hopes died, and we are here to perform the autopsy. I'm your host, Joe Reed. I'm here, as always, with my ketchup smiley face, Chris Feil. Hello, Chris.
Also, ketchup on fried eggs is gross. You can only do ketchup
on scrambled eggs. I don't even like ketchup on scrambled eggs. I like ketchup. I like eggs. I like them separate. I don't like them together. If you want to have anything, give me like scrambled eggs and a breakfast meat and some like maybe toast and put some like maple syrup on it or something. But like
eggs and maple syrup.
If you get them, have you ever done
we're
like eggs?
Get into a fight about breakfast.
Eggs, breakfast meat, and like a pancake on the plate, and you just like pour syrup over everything. Ugh.
Fried eggs and ketchup as basically the poster for this movie.
Yeah.
Fairly upsetting.
It is much like the movie Music. It is an idea that never fully like gets to the point of like, how would this actually work? Because like it's nice on a plate, I guess, to look at for like half a second. But like it doesn't enhance the meal. You just have like a smear of ketchup on your plate, which like doesn't really do anything for anybody.
You can do a smile with bacon. Like you could just
you
have like
you sure can.
Bacon.
And I guess we're like bacon's more expensive, so I get it.
Sure.
Mary Kay Place is trying to make ends meet, and we love her for that.
Mary Kay Place, who I thought this could be our six timers for Mary Kay Place. No, we've done four Mary Kay Place movies. But then Kate Hudson. I thought it could be Kate Hudson's. No, we've done four Kate Hudson movies now.
Where are we
but
on then, Juliette Lewis?
Juliette Lewis, four Juliette Lewis movies.
Wow. Okay. All right. Thank you for checking.
Unless I missed something, but yeah.
Absolutely forgot. So, okay.
Mary Kay Place. How do we think Mary Kay Place got involved in this movie? Is she just in like a group chat for Survivor fans?
you're saying Survivor is one of the avenues to get to Sia. You are either a Dance Moms fan and started watching Sia music videos because you like Maddie Ziegler, or you are a fan of the movies of 2016 that have song soundtracks, in which you listened to many Sia songs because she was all over those soundtracks. You're an Eagle Huntress fan, perhaps.
Neon Demon sounds good.
Zootopia. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on with Sia. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like Mary Kay Place likes to work. That's fine. You know, it was a day. I imagine she was 2 days.
Mary
right?
Kay Place is in a musical sequence. She was definitely a second day.
She was there for a second day. Still, for 2 days' work, that's not so bad. Maybe Goldie Hawn reached out and was like, "Mary, we were both in." No, wait. What were they both in together? They had to have been both in something together. No, but Kurt could have called up and said, "Hey, Mary Kay, we were both in Captain Ron together. You want to do Kate a favor and be in her movie?" That's probably what happened.
Captain Ron, a movie that would be more fun to talk about than this movie.
By leaps and bounds. I was watching this movie. I watched it this morning, first thing in the morning, like I was still in bed and I fired up Peacock and I started watching Music. And I had to pause it about 20 minutes
in. Pick your jaw off the floor?
Well, and like, to take a nap, to be like, well, I got up a little too early. I got up a little too early and I was like, you know what? I probably just need to like get a little, it was one of those things where you wake up at 7 and you're like, I could either go back to bed for like a little bit or I could just start my day. And so I just started my day by watching music. And then 20 minutes in, I'm like,
the worst possible way to start a day.
I made the wrong decision. I need to be fully rested to watch this. So I know that this movie was a patron selection, and so I don't want to malign or disparage our patron. All I will say is, think about the damage you inflict on your podcasters when you do this kind of thing, people. Think about our poor little psyches and what we have to do.
Chaos pick.
Once I found out that her name is Music...
Oh, yes, the titular role of Music in this movie.
Now that I'm doing the Cinematrix, we have a recurring column header that is movies with character names in the title. And so I'm on sort of like on the lookout for movies with, like in Smoke and Aces, how one of the characters' name is Ace, is Ace. So I'm like, that's, you know, that's how they get you. But Music is a sneaky one now.
Yes, because it qualifies. I came to you with one that I was like, I don't know about this, but I'm not going to guess it. But
I do enjoy that my friends have been texting me with their, and everybody, again, very polite about it and whatever, and just being like, I think this is wrong. And at least when my friends do it, my friends are usually right. And I'm like, usually like, thank you for catching that. We'll add it back in or whatever.
Not your friends are messaging you to be like, actually, Adam Sandler is in Uncut Gems. And you're like, the category is Adam Driver. Thank you.
There was a couple. Wait, where was one the other day where somebody was like,
I love the people that were pissed at you that they think that Shakespeare is books.
Well, that I at least was like, I at least acknowledge that, like, that is a gray area where I could understand somebody being
not
like
a gray area. Plays are not books.
I know it's not. But like, I understand how some people might think that.
I do.
I should be flagging some of these ones because there are some really goddamn good ones. Where it's just like, oh, you are like, yes, that movie counts, but that movie does not apply to any of the headers. All of the people, the multiple people who were absolutely convinced that Tilda Swinton was Kate Blanchett. That Tilda Swinton was in I'm Not There.
Tilda Swinton was Tar. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely convinced. Very, very funny. Very, very good stuff. God bless it. As I say to, like, I've said to a couple of people, I'm like, if I were to get to the point where I was mailing in a correction, I would at least feel like I would go check and make sure that my information was right. Also, like, I understand that us doing U.S. box office instead of world box office is tripping some people up. Doing world box office would be no more arbitrary than doing U.S. box office. Like, it is, you are making a choice for one or the other, and we are making the choice of U.S. box office, mostly because once you go back 10 years or further, nobody ever talked about worldwide box office back then. So, like, my feeling is your concept of a successful movie for like the 90s is 100 million domestic, and whatever worldwide was doesn't matter. Right?
Sure.
You seem like you disagree.
I would not be arguing for world. I don't know. I mean, I can have a guess of what things are doing worldwide box office, but that's not as easily, that's not in the like popular discussion lexicon for.
Right.
You know.
I think,
and you're right. Let's be clear. The Vulture is an American, it is New York Magazine.
It is, in fact.
So it makes sense that it's U.S. box office.
And I feel like if we did worldwide box office, we'd get just as many people in there being like, wait a second, like, you know.
Or you'd get people cheating at the game, and that's not fun.
Well, whatever. Anyway.
Movies that did not make $100 million at the U.S. box office. Sia's Music.
Ugh. Didn't make anything at
not
the American
only
box office.
Is it a highly controversial and problematic movie, not only is it, I'm just going to say unequivocally, the worst movie we've ever covered on this podcast.
I was going to say, I was thinking about that. I'm like, is this the worst movie we've ever covered? I think it might be.
On top of those things, it was also released during a pandemic, before really anybody but medical professionals were getting the vaccine. So
this movie, I am pretty plugged in to things, as you know, as you know, evidenced by this podcast and my career. And so to get to the point now where the Golden Globe nominations are coming out, and there is a movie that I've not heard of. I had not heard of Music before those nominations came out. And like, that's rare. That's real rare. Then all of a sudden I was like, what is this?
I remember sending it to you and being like, so I found out Sia made a movie. This seems like the type of bullshit that could play at TIFF and nobody ever talked
about
it.
And it went in one ear and out the other and nobody ever talked about it. And so I never, like, it never stuck in my brain. Mm-hmm. It never implanted in the soft tissues of my folds of my brain.
Well, and she was in post-production for this movie for over 3 years.
Over 3 years. Maybe that's
like
a clue.
Like, she's Terrence fucking Malick.
That's a clue, Sia, is when you're doing post-production on this movie for 3 years.
Because I wrote down the quote from one of her
firing movies. Editors left and right.
Right. This is her words, how she phrased
yes.
it. Yes. I couldn't seem to find the right editor, someone who understood the magic I was trying to make happen. That's code for...
bunch of people quit.
Everyone was like, this is a nightmare and this is bad and we need to salvage this. And she's like, no, but it's about... I have good intentions with this. And it's like,
we give...
okay.
We as a culture have given Barbara Streisand shit for this kind of thing. And like, this is the example of what, it, you know, what we should really be giving people shit for. Oh boy. Oh boy. And here's the thing.
Where to start?
For I like Chandelier. I like, what was the other Sia song that I like? I like Chandelier. And like, I was not predisposed to like, oh, I'm gonna rip this Sia movie apart because it's Sia. I wanted to give this thing a chance. I love Kate Hudson. There are a few people I love.
We
more
love
than Kate
Hudson here.
We are official.
This is the worst Kate Hudson performance.
You know, I love dance as a medium.
We like musicals.
We like a dream ballet.
We like creative swings.
Leslie Odom Jr. have no problem with that guy. Hector Elizondo. The pretty woman himself?
Kathy Najimy. The aforementioned okay. Mary Kay Place.
Did we see Kathy Najimy's face and I missed it? Or did I just like, is she just like credited as like woman from the couch who keeps yelling at Julia
Lewis?
I think
she's in like a shot of the movie.
Okay, because I did not catch
it. She shares a title card with, is it Tig Notaro or Juliette Lewis that she...
I think Juliette Lewis gets single card, but I think she might share a card with Tig Notaro also. Hilariously funny as like as the host of a maybe hallucinatory television series, like she's
right.
like she's fucking Death to Smoochie or something like that. Like, what the hell's going on in this movie?
Speaking of which, I have that waiting on me as a pickup from the library. I was like, I think this is gonna be the time that I get.
Did seeing Danny DeVito on the Oscars inspire you to
100%? It did.
Fantastic.
I was like, I need to finally watch Death to Smoochie.
Not a movie I care for, but I'm interested to see your thoughts on it.
Maybe I have seen Death to Smoochie and I memory hold it.
It's possible.
Anyway.
It's possible.
Also, Sia is in this movie.
Speaking of Death to Music, a movie that should be consigned to the incinerator of life.
And it's shocking that it isn't. Like, it's such a work of
I mean, it's
profound, profound living in a bubble ego that it's on Peacock right now, and it hasn't been scrubbed from the earth.
I know,
that
it's
was
true.
Like my initial reaction that I
it's
was
on
like,
Peacock
how?
And Freevee at the same time. It's on multiple platforms that you can
how
watch.
Does this exist in the world? Like, how is this allowed to exist? Did Sia not have like an agent that was like, so listen,
here's the thing, is
you gotta burn this.
My threshold, I like to think my threshold for offense is pretty high. Like, I will accept a lot of things in movies and be like, it might be bad, but it's not like offensive. You know what I mean?
We lived
like,
through the 90s. We can stomach a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
That's offensive.
I'm made of sterner stuff. But like, watching this movie, I'm like, oh yeah, I get it. Like, I get why everybody was like, oh, this movie is offensive. It is. It's the multiple levels of having Maddie Ziegler essentially give her radio Like, this is Maddie Ziegler doing her radio. Meanwhile, the movie has these really pat and retrograde ideas about, like, what somebody on the autism spectrum, like, where their place in a narrative is. And it's mm-hmm. like, oh, they have dreams where they can dance. And isn't that nice that they, you know... And
that alone is pretty retrograde. And the casting of Maddie Ziegler, you know, music is herself a non-verbal person on the spectrum, which Maddie Ziegler is not. And the idea of casting someone who isn't in this role is enough to upset people. But then when you actually... Because I had only seen maybe a few clips online or a trailer... The trailer does not tell you
what
Maddie Ziegler's performance is like. And it's outright offensive. And, like, granted, she was, I think, 14 or 15 when they filmed this movie.
Right, exactly. Like,
so
she's a kid.
Obviously highly influenced and, like, directed to do this. So it's like, there's only so much ire, I think, you can direct towards Maddie Ziegler.
Right. I wouldn't direct any ire towards Maddie Ziegler. Like, she's a cog in this machine. And then on top of that the movie is also saying, like, isn't it nice that this fuck up of an adult person has this person on the spectrum in their life to teach them about what really matters? And it's, you know what I mean, that, like,
the person
with a disability is there to teach life lessons to the main character, and which is very retrograde in and of itself. And on top of
and
all
then
of that,
here is their black male neighbor to also teach them
also
about
do that
too. It's like it's
and
neurodivergence things that it gets wrong in this movie. And then I also think it's a very racist movie on top of that.
And it uses HIV as a surprise, as a jump scare almost. And it also, like, in another totally unnecessary storyline, kills a teenager for poignancy. Like, kills a teenager of color for poignancy to the main narrative. And
because the movie also has to suddenly become about domestic violence, and it's so, like Crash looks nuanced compared to this movie.
Well, here's the thing. There was a time when the era of big music video, you know, in the 90s and early aughts even, in the 80s and 90s and early aughts, in the era of big music video, you would have music videos by Aerosmith doing Janie Got a Gun, or Reba McEntire and all of her, like, Garth Brooks had these, like, big, elaborate narrative music videos where they were, like, just these big melodramas and terrible things happened and, you know, people would get shot and husbands would leave wives and infidelities would be discovered. And all of this sort of stuff. And it would all be in the form of a music video where it's, like, essentially pantomimed and, you know, set to the beat of some, you know, the thunder rolls or whatever. And
not the thunder roll.
Right. But, like, but go check it out. You know what I mean? Like, that's a melodramatic ass video. And even in those music videos, you were like, all right, this is a lot. But also, it was like, oh, we're going to tell these, like, weird operatic stories within that space. That's what music reminded me of, is, like, in a different media landscape, Sia would have made Reba music videos and gotten her level of sort of dishpan deep insights into the human condition out in that medium. And it wouldn't have been great, but it also would have been contained in a little sort of, like, oh, we're going to do the 8-minute extended video of whatever this thing is. And she could have directed all her videos, and it would have been, that would have been perfectly not the worst. And it would have kept her from putting that level of sort of cringy broad strokes insight into humanity into this feature-length movie and taking down, you know, at least one Oscar-nominated actress with her.
An Oscar-nominated actor in this season.
Yes, in this season. In the season, wow.
The same season of the movie.
That's true. It's Leslie Odom Jr.'s Norbit. No wonder he had no chance to win.
No wonder he gave zero interviews about this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you truly had no idea that he was in this movie. We'll talk about Kate Hudson later because I want to get into
the new pop star, Kate Hudson.
Oh, we'll get into the whole thing about it. But just in general, with our deepest thanks and respect to our patron who requested
Stuart.
This.
Stuart. What Chaos Agent.
What did Stuart have to say?
Stuart didn't give an Oscar origin story, okay. Didn't have a ton to say other than wanting to throw this one in our mix. Stuart said it got two very solid Golden Globe nominations. Stuart, I wonder what you mean by the word solid.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like I remember reading about it having Oscar buzz before everyone swiftly turned against it, although I can't remember now if that's revisionist history on my part. Stuart, I feel like the buzz around this movie percolated a little bit, and then all of a sudden, when people realized what it was, it just like exploded. And mm-hmm. it's so funny to think that this movie was shot in 2017,
yeah,
didn't get released until 2021 in the season that, you know, went through
bled into
March or February.
February. For, I think if you were released through the end of February 2021, you could count towards
and
the
those Oscars year. Were in April.
Yeah,
it. This movie was originally planned to be an IMAX. Like it was supposed.
That's
to
what's
be the
listed
IMAX
on role. IMDb. The premiere is listed as an IMAX
because
debut.
Rather than getting an actual IMAX release, they did like a one-night event.
One night only?
Extreme scare quotes.
That's all we have to give?
Yes. Thank you, Effie. I can't imagine seeing this piece of shit in IMAX.
I've talked about
the musical
weird
sequences don't even look good. It's
I've talked about the weird movies that I have seen at the IMAX theater at TIFF. The Danish Girl being the most incongruous. Ooh. I feel like music might have taken that cake there. If I had seen the interludes, we'll talk about. Let's get on to the other side of the plot before we talk about the interludes. Yeah. Because
we
like
can
we
also
need
talk
to really
a little bit about musicians who have directed movies.
Sure, why not? Let's do that.
Should we talk about our Patreon maybe first?
Why don't we, Chris? Why don't you tell our listeners why they should sign up for this Head Oscar Buzz Turbulent Brilliance?
Listen, we're here doing another Patreon Selects episode. Thank you, Stuart. We salute you. Listeners, you may or may not know, we have a Patreon called This Had Oscar Buzz Turbulent Brilliance. For $5 a month, you're going to get at least two bonus episodes every month. The first of those will be what we call exceptions, which are movies that fit our rubric but manage to score a nomination or two. We've done listeners' choice exceptions, including Molly's Game and The Lovely Bones. We've done episodes on Nine, The Mirror Has Two Faces, Charlie Wilson's War, Australia. We're going to be doing, this is an April episode. Oh, yes. So we will have, over on the Patreon, we will have an episode on Vanilla Sky.
Yeah.
Deeply fascinating. Very curious to see where we fall on this movie on this rewatch.
Yes.
Vanilla Sky.
Vanilla
Second episode
Sky.
Will be what we call excursions. These are basically deep dives into ephemera that we love to obsess over on this show. These episodes drop on the 15th of the month. We're going to be doing this month. We're going to be doing an episode on the 1997 Entertainment Weekly Fall Movie Preview, the one that had Jackie Brown on the cover.
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about coverage on Titanic, all those 97 movies. We've done things like recap old award shows like the 96 MTV Movie Awards. We talk about Hollywood Reporter roundtables. We've had our own little mini award show called the This Had Oscar Buzz Superlatives. But yes, for $5 a month, you can come over and join us and have a good time. Stuart, who chose this episode, is one of our limited sponsor tier patrons. So if you ever see an opening that there's a slot there, you could always sign up for our sponsor tier if you feel so generous. But either way, come over to This Had Oscar Buzz Turbulent Brilliance over at patreon.com/thishadoscarbuzz.
Indeed. Yes, sign up for our sponsor tier and stick around for 3 months and then subject us to the most unwell shit. And there you have it. Yeah, so, all right, Chris, before no further ado, I feel like we should dive right in. We're going to be talking about the 2021 film Music, directed by Sia, written by Sia and Dallas Clayton, starring Kate Hudson, Maddie Ziegler, Leslie Odom Jr., Hector Elizondo, Mary Kay Place, Ben Schwartz in cornrows, Juliette Lewis, who wore cornrows to the Academy Awards the year she was nominated, Tig Notaro, Henry Rollins as angry neighbor, and Kathy Najimy as back of the head of a mom who needs pills, premiered, as we said, in an IMAX theater on February 10th, 2021. Chris, I'm going to pull out my timer, and you have the unenviable task of giving a plot description for the film.
I don't know if I'll need a full... Me here.
Well,
I don't know if I'll need a full 60
seconds. Don't write checks your mouth can't cash, but let's start.
That's
right?
Fair.
And begin.
All right. So we meet Music, who's a young neurodivergent girl who imagines through listening to music, you know, a fantasy world where she sings and dance. She's taken care of by her grandmother, played by Mary Kay Place, who dies, leaving her in the care of Zoo, her older sister, who is a drug dealer and has had issues with sobriety. Zoo naturally does not know really how to care for her sister. So then their neighbor, played by Leslie Odom Jr., develops a relationship with both of them and teaches Zoo
seconds.
How to basically take care of Music. Meanwhile, Zoo gets a bee sting and has to go to the hospital. This means that Zoo has to relapse for some reason over this. And then she gets into a fight and she almost puts Music up for adoption and then decides not to do it suddenly, like a movie from the 90s. And then they both show up to Leslie Odom Jr.'s brother's wedding and they all sing a song together and they're one happy family. That's the movie.
2 seconds over. Not too bad. Sorry, I forgot to give you a 10-second warning. 2 seconds over.
No plot in this movie. The movie, the biggest plot turn hinges on a bee sting.
Okay, here's the thing. You said she relapses for some reason. The movie has Zoo, which is short for Kazoo. Put a pin in that. We'll talk about it. has Zoo feel like Music got stung by a bee and nearly died and it was all my fault. And literally, I'm reading a description of the movie on Wikipedia and like Lord knows who those come from, but which says, while Zoo was distracted, Maddie gets stung by a bee. I'm like, okay, I'm starting to think the movie might co-sign the perspective that like Zoo was negligent in this moment and allowed Music to get stung by a bee. You don't control the bees. I don't care how irresponsible you are or responsible you are. You can't control the bees. Second of all, she was distracted by like disposing of the chewing gum that Music had picked off of the bottom of a park bench and started chewing. So it's not like Zoo was like sunbathing or like, you know, shooting heroin under a bridge or something like that.
Drinking alcohol.
Right. So it's like this bee sting, I guess maybe the responsibility she feels is she didn't realize that there was an EpiPen in the bag and maybe she could have just taken care of it quicker and didn't have to risk anything. Maybe that's the thing. But like, whatever
it
is.
It's the flimsiest plot device.
Well, they're all flimsy plot devices in this movie. My goodness. You didn't mention at all the fact that Zoo has a side hustle as a drug dealer where she's like...
Yeah, I said she was a drug dealer.
Well, but like... The ins and outs
of it. People literally call her a drug dealer in this movie.
She calls herself a drug dealer, I feel like. And also, it's like, And it's
but they call her that like it's her name. Sia calls her that like it's her name.
Drug dealer. Is drug dealer here? Like how Karen talks about like Driver and Will and Grace or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah.
But also it's treated as like an Uber driver, right? It's like it's her gig economy job. She's the most altruistic drug dealer ever. She's giving Juliette Lewis drugs to like give her mom so that her mom will like be calm during this party that she's at. She's giving Sia has her go and buy drugs so that she can like drop ship them to Africa or something. Like right. It's all this like she can't even be like just like be a regular drug. Just be a regular drug dealer, Zoo.
Deal weed.
Deal weed. Deal...
She brings gummies. There's apps for that. Like
deal fucking G. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like give gay guys party drugs. They're going to do them anyway. Whatever.
Well, but like it's so clearly Sia wanting to do some PG version
mm-hmm.
of a story that's actually wading into murkier territory than what like this like sunshiny movie she ultimately wants to make. And like I don't want to like go too hard on this movie in a certain way because it's clear that it was somewhat, you know, not inspired by, but like Sia's had her own addiction story,
right?
And like
right
that might have served as a source of inspiration for what she the message she was ultimately trying to
inspiration
tell.
Yes.
It's just so
yes,
not in the real world. It's you know
right.
It feels very much like
she's a drug dealer, but the drugs are HIV meds, and she's delivering them to people
so that
who can't afford them.
So this is a PG movie for kids to see or something. You know, it's
well, it's just it's a movie for somebody who reads like headlines on Facebook. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And or headlines on Twitter. And
also Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
Kind of, yes. Easily my favorite character in this movie is Hector Elizondo, who is playing the Hector Elizondo character, who is just
yes.
no-nonsense, kind, older man who, you know, the rent, he needs the rent, but also, you know, he knows how to help music, but also he can only be bothered for so long, and... this movie.
The great Hector Elizondo.
The great Hector Elizondo. As I said, the pretty woman himself. So, the other thing is, because this movie needs to be whimsical, music is not just like a girl who is on the autism spectrum who lives in her apartment with her grandmother. She also is like an integral part of this neighborhood where like the guy who runs the coffee cart on the street knows her, and the guy down the hall looks out for her, and Hector Elizondo looks out for her, and, you know, the kindly constable on the street says, "Hello, music," as she passes. You know what I mean? It's like that level of, you know,
the baker with his tray,
like
always,
thank you. Yes,
the
exactly.
The woman who needs six eggs.
Yes, she really is a funny girl. Yeah. Oh, all right. So, brief aside. So, Zoo is named Kazoo. Music is named Music. But Kazoo isn't spelled K-A-Z-O-O like the instrument. It's spelled K-A-Z-U. Now, what is this? What I'm trying to piece together the portrait of their parents.
We never even meet their brother Recorder. Like,
thank you. Triangle is off in Europe somewhere, and we've never... we've never even bothered to contact him. No, but like, I'm just like, I feel like I've got a handle on this parent of theirs that is absent, and then I don't anymore. And like, you had me and you lost me. I don't know. Now just her name is Kazoo, and now it's just, all right, fine. But she's named Zoo because she's wild and unpredictable, and the animals.
She shaves her head. We haven't even talked about. Kate Hudson being
here's the thing.
Shaved head in this movie.
The fact that Kate Hudson shaved her head for this movie tells me that she really thought this was going to be her movie. This was going to be her
girl.
Big deal, right? Like, isn't that what that communicates to you? That like this one really
the
matters.
Performance doesn't communicate that to me because hate to say it, we love Kate Hudson, but she's barely lifting a finger in her scenes. I think the musical sequences, she seems to be into it and vibing.
I don't know. I think there are a couple scenes where she has to like give like big dramatic crying. And I think like, I do think she's really going for it. The thing about Kate Hudson and the thing that I hope that Glass Onion taught her after this was she's so much more effective when she doesn't try that hard. Like the thing about Almost Famous is she's so good by being so sort of loose and light and sort of, you know, she gets
but
so much
in.
She gets so much more communicated by like a look at Billy Crudup, you know what I mean? Or the way that she sort of like brushes some hair out of William Miller's face or whatever. And it's so much more effective than when she's trying for like serious dramatics in this. And then she goes and she makes Glass Onion and she's a fucking scream by being, again, sort of like loose and comedic and breezy and I'm not saying that that's not work. That is work. But what I think I'm saying the opposite, which is not everybody can do that. Not everybody has that arsenal. So please give us that. Give us that thing that you can do that not everybody can do. A lot of people can do the breakdown and crying a lot better. So let them do that. You know what I mean? And you do the thing that you can do that these other people can't do. And we'll all be much happier.
How much do you think she and Leslie Odom Jr. talked about this movie on the set of Glass Onion?
I hope.
Do you think they were unable to meet each other in the eye the entire filming?
Well, I want to know, like, who in that cast was like, so, let's see a movie you made. Like, it's Dave Bautista. Does Dave Bautista have, like, the level of, like, guys, I don't know,
Dave Bautista might be like, wow, so you made a movie with Sia. Can't wait. I don't know.
No, Dave Bautista would have been the only one in that cast who saw that movie. Like, everybody else was like, oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Hey, man, I caught up with music. Great movie.
And Bautista's like, oh, guys, I feel bad. I saw that movie. That's not good. No, I think Dave Bautista has, like, excellent taste. Like, I think he's one.
He's watching like Tarkovsky films,
right?
Zoo.
Right, yeah. Exactly, exactly. Demi, yeah, he's getting all into like really, really good cinema, and you're right. But like Kate and Leslie can't meet each other at the eye and don't want to talk about it, and you know are in the same support group together, and they can't mention it because it's anonymous, and every once in a while, Kate or Leslie will be like, well, I had this experience one time. And the other one will be like, no, like shake their head. And
I
just
don't
like
think Kate Hudson ever did any press for this movie either.
Well, it's tough to tell who wasn't doing press because of COVID.
I mean, if you didn't have to do press for something, you didn't have to.
Right.
It does not feel like Leslie Odom Jr. in my memory was ever asked about this movie while he was Oscar campaigning for One Night in Miami.
I mean, that might have been part of the writer. Who knows?
It's true.
So the dance scenes in this film are sort of reveries, are filmed as little tiny music videos, which are intended to be like inside music's head. And inside her head, she has freedom of movement. She has...
The first words in this movie, the first lyrics are, in my dreams, my body does not control me.
That is true.
About the lyrics in this movie.
Who's the choreographer this? Ryan Heffington is the choreographer for this, who had done a lot of Sia's music videos. Who else had he done? Some Florence and the Machine stuff. A couple of Years and Years videos. I'm trying to think if I remember him from specific like TV shows. Oh, he won the Creative Arts Emmy for choreography for Euphoria in 2022. All right. The choreography in this is very off-putting in that like, and I think the idea is supposed to be like, because Music is autistic and cannot effectively communicate her emotions in real life, in this, her emotions are very upfront. So it's all of this very sort of like big open palm hands and big smiles and big expressions on the face that like, and I think the idea is supposed to be that like, she has so many emotions in her dream life because mm-hmm. she can't express them in whatever. But the effect that comes across is very juvenile, kids show, romper room, you know, big comfy couch. Like what other like,
it feels
Zoobly
like
Zoo.
It's a movie meant for very young children.
Yes!
Not like there's like Nick Jr. and then isn't there like sub Nick Jr. that's like, this is for like very, very young children.
Yeah.
But also on top of that, you add this like really thick layer of what comes across as condescension.
Yes.
Like even just as a concept, which you just described, seems inappropriate and condescending, but then the way that it's executed in this movie, it's just like,
yeah,
it's taken to such an extreme that like it's just offensive.
It's almost like you're making fun of the character. It feels like mm-hmm. to that level of, and you're sort of and insulting the audience at the same time, being like, is this the level of emotional complexity you feel like we can handle from this movie? Because like, you're talking to us like we're stupid, and you're communicating these dances to us like we're stupid, and it all just is so romper room.
Very misguided and not well thought through.
No.
It's all very first idea, and that's a problem when you're dealing with sensitive material, but I also think it's a problem functionally when you're doing a high concept musical.
Yeah.
Because these musical sequences, they're all like pinks and yellows and like bright mm-hmm. colors.
Bright oranges.
And it doesn't ever feel like this exciting technicolor.
Yeah.
It almost feels like very claustrophobic. It's weird. Like
they're in like a big box theater. Not a big box theater. That's not a thing.
It wants to be like a 1940s splashy big studio musical, but it's on mm-hmm. a teeny tiny little set. Like
yes.
there's not enough space even for the dancers. That
everything feels very small and closed in. I think the point you sort of hit on there is everything in this movie feels first idea. Everything in this movie feels like somebody just sort of had what they think is this brilliant brainstorm, and you needed to have a second or third pass at it where somebody's like, you know, maybe not. Maybe step back from this. Maybe this is not the right. The fact that the character of Zoo was originally supposed to be played by Shia LaBeouf or Jonah Hill before Sia like saw Kate Hudson singing on Instagram, and then decided on a whim to just change the character and have Kate Hudson play her. And it's like, okay, that to me tracks, because that's the sort of like, oh, I have an idea. Why don't we make a movie about mm-hmm. this? And, you know, why don't we give her dream sequences where she can dance? And
there's value in creative people being told no.
Yes. Well,
there's value in creative people being told to reinforce or being questioned on their choices.
Yes.
Or, you know, because it gives you a depth of thought and a depth of idea that this movie just doesn't have. This movie effectively looks like what happens when someone is never told no. Like,
yes.
Ugh.
So Golden Globe nomination day comes. And
set the stage for the Globes, though, because this is also...
This is 0 hour for the Golden Globes. This was when... Here's what I will tell you exactly what happened. Is for years... I think... All right. Here's where I'm going to be maybe a little controversial. And everybody just go with me as I'm rattling things off the top of my head. And know that I mean nobody any actual insult. I think for years, the movie people had sort of learned to take the Golden Globes with a grain of salt, to be like, yes, it's the Hollywood Foreign Press, no, nobody really knows who they are. They're kind of a weird little group and whatever, and we've given them too much power, but it's all part of the pageantry, and we're all going to go through it and be fine with it. And then the more that the television awards became important or seen as important, and the more people who cover television covered the Golden Globes and were sort of resentful about having to cover the Golden Globes, because the Golden Globes TV awards are self-evidently pointless because they don't lead up to anything. They follow the Emmy Awards by a couple of months. There's no actual place for them within the awards calendar for television. And so they just are dumb. And I think, again, there are some people who learn to like take the dumbness of the Golden Globe TV awards as sort of a fun little sideshow about just like, what brand new television are they going to award this year? Like, oh, okay. Like, you know, what's the Emily in Paris? Sure. The Flight Attendant? Yes. Why not? Like, absolutely. Ratched? 1,000,000%. They will go for that. And I think then the people who cover TV increasingly took to trying to sort of like nail the Golden Globes to a cross because they were, you know, fed up with the increasingly ridiculous television nominations. And so then the nominations this year come out, and the by far most lauded television show up to that point that year was I May Destroy You, was Michaela Cole's I May Destroy You. And that one didn't get any kind of Emmy nominations. And to me, I'm like...
Golden Globe nomination.
Or Golden Globe nomination. Sorry, thank you. And to me, when I saw that, I was like, well, of course. The Golden Globes are like
Euro trash.
Are trashy dum dums. They're not going to get
TV taste.
They're not going to get like a sort of gritty, serious, introspective, like kind of hard edged, but like, you know, impeccably performed HBO series. I don't really expect that from them. And so you had so many people being like, really? Like, you know, Emily in Paris gets nominated, but not I May Destroy You. And I'm like, this isn't a meritocracy. It's the Golden Globes TV Awards. What are you talking about? But people got so mad that literally, I genuinely feel like the Golden Globes got taken down because of that snub. Like, that snub sort of released the hounds. Well,
they'd had a long history, and I would say that it had gotten worse in years leading up to the pandemic.
And also it was the pandemic and a lot of people had a lot of time on their hands. And so they had time to dismantle the Golden Globes that year.
But the Globes had a reputation of being bought or being perceived to be bought.
Yes.
I mean, like, go back to our episode on the Muse, listeners.
Yeah.
There's also things like the Aaron Taylor Johnson win that looked dubious as hell. And, you know, they're... The Globes, like you said in the preamble, there is a certain level of, well, these are just not legitimate, period. They're just not. Like, well, and also in this year, this is the year that it was revealed that they had no Black members whatsoever.
Right.
And, like, on top of having members who would basically be buying bribes for... for nominations or whatever, or for access, basically.
Right.
They also had people who were just like not working members of any type of press corps.
Right.
It's just basically like.
They pulled back the curtain. The curtain unveiled.
And they pulled back the curtain and found a bevy of Euro trash, basically. And
I do think if it was not a pandemic and people could actually go outside and breathe fresh air and to coin a cliche, touch grass, we might not have seen the Golden Globes go down in flames like this. I just feel like...
I feel like you're too pinpointing the pandemic to them going down. It felt like... And I do think you're right about the TV critics part of it. The Globes had already been on this downward trajectory.
Sure.
The Globes had already had a lot of things that were upsetting people about...
There would have been things would have gotten uncovered and, you know, there would have been... sanctions or something like this, but I don't think we would have gotten to the point where like the Golden Globes got removed from television, you know what I mean, and had to like get
sold. Well,
they're
still back on television, so it's like...
Right, but that's what I mean. So now they're back on television and it's because we're back from a pandemic. You know what I mean? It's like, I think people got very, very righteous about the Golden Globes for a while because, you know, there was election anxiety and there was, you know, a lot of displaced stuff.
I also think that a lot of this, because you did have all of Hollywood dropping out of the Golden Globes, you had Tom Cruise returning all of his Golden Globes. God. And, it, you know, I think some of that is there's a lot we don't know about. And it's like we know about cases like Brendan Fraser.
Right.
And what he experienced with Golden Globe members. And I think there is a lot of that. Scarlett Johansson, I remember, had some type of quote about her experiences with the Hollywood Foreign Press Association members. And I do think that within the industry, as soon as there was an excuse to not have to do it,
sure,
there was already built bad blood with that organization.
But I also feel like when it was gone, I think there was a hole in that calendar that, you know, the movie stars may talk about how they, you know, don't like going to, you know, all of these award shows. And yet, like, they sure do love the benefit that it gives to their Oscar campaign. You know what I mean? So, like, right. I don't know. I think there was a lot. My least favorite thing is posturing. And there was just a lot of posturing going on that year about righteousness with regard to the Golden Globes that I feel like, okay, all right.
With the Eurotrash statue.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Speaking of the statue, we're also in the era where it looks like somebody spray painted a tall boy.
A Bud Light Bud tall boy.
Gold.
God.
Yeah.
Those ugly ass new tin Budweiser tall boys. And now that's what the new Golden Globe statue looks like. It sucks so bad. It's my least favorite statue. This is what I'll cancel. This is what I'll go to the mat for, is the fucking statue looks so stupid. It used to be a very handsome statue. These look cheap. I feel like they're that's a cost-cutting maneuver. It definitely feels like that.
Sure. In the words of Isabelle Huppert, today is her birthday. How could I forget my Golden Globe? Very handy if you become attacked.
It used to be. Now I feel like if you tried to hit somebody with it, it would break.
Yeah, so, it would, you know, crush like an aluminum can.
It would crush like an aluminum can. So let's take a trip into
two nominations.
The movie awards at the Golden Globes this year. Music gets two nominations. Best film, musical, or comedy, where it is up against. And again, I apologize for the PTSD that reading the names of some of these movies will engender, because these are actual portkeys that, like, take you back to the pandemic, that you just, like, if you think about them for too long, you will get COVID. And so, like, be careful out there. The nominees
were...
You will
hear the bolt on your home lock shut, and you will be, like, suctioned back through the time-space continuum.
You will find yourself with a swab up your nose, like, it just appears
in
there.
4-day-old pajamas.
Yeah, 100%.
Wine bottles surround.
With an Instacart order on your porch that you have not touched because you're waiting for...
you have to wait 15 minutes or something and then you're wiping it down. This is what this list of movies will do to you.
Yes, this list of movies will wipe down your groceries. Borat subsequent movie film. Hamilton, because it aired on Disney Plus, and that was that was good enough for movies that year. Music, Palm Springs, good movie. Good movie. Certainly the best of these five, and The Prom.
Yeah, the best of that five, but
Palm Springs is funny. I liked Palm Springs a lot. Not coincidentally, was a movie I saw in a theater right before things shut down. Music nominated there. Borat subsequent movie film wins, and then Kate Hudson. Her performance is nominated in Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, where she's nominated against Maria Bakalova for Borat's subsequent movie film, Michelle Pfeiffer for French Exit, Rosamund Pike for I Care a Lot, and Anya Taylor-Joy for Emma, period.
I just think...
And Rosamund Pike wins this one for I Care a Lot.
This is... I just feel like my brain actually rotting looking at these two categories back to back, because it's like, especially that Best Picture lineup. You look at just the Best Actress lineup and it's like, you know, you did have options. Like, you could have done something else. You could have just nominated those.
You could have nominated Emma. You could have nominated French
Emma
Exit.
Emma, period. Yeah. French Exit. I Care a Lot. Also, I wrote down I Care a Lot's not good, too.
But, yeah.
You could have replaced Kate Hudson with Meryl for The Prom, and no one would have had an issue.
100%. What other options were there?
You could have had On the Rocks. Bill Murray is nominated in Supporting Actor. You could have had On the Rocks nominated in both of those categories. The On the Rocks supporter is logging in. Emma, period, could have been a...
I'm going to allow you to say two times that Palm Springs was eh, I'm going to at least say at least once that On the Rocks was eh, and that Rashida Jones was not very good in it. And I like Rashida Jones, but I don't think she was very good in it.
Boo!
Okay. Did I boo you? Did I call you wrong? No, I was very polite.
Palm Springs is not that good.
Oh, shut up.
You know who's good in it, though? Kristen Milioti. If Kristen Milioti had been nominated, no one
You know
would
who's great
that.
In Palm Springs is Andy Samberg. He's better than Bill Murray is in On the Rocks. Nope, I'm right, and you're wrong, and there we go.
You could have nominated in that Best Picture category. I think the Globes maybe changed their rules, but like, you could have nominated Soul. I didn't think Soul was that good.
They would have had to change their rules, but they could have, yes.
Because I think that because they have an animated category now, I think it's only English language movies are now nominated
because
for Best Picture.
Right, because they have their own category.
American movies that are just not in English, like Minari and The Farewell.
Yes.
It's the dumbest.
I think it's different. I don't, whatever.
If you're,
there are worse things. There are worse things.
But also, entirely not nominated, except was it nominated for Song? I don't think.
What is it? And I'll tell you.
It's not nominated for Song, but they could have nominated in both of those categories Eurovision. Eurovision. Rachel
100%
McAdams is so
nominated
good
Rachel
in Eurovision.
McAdams. 100%. Sorry, you got me mid swig of water. Yes, absolutely they could have and should have.
If they had options, what the heck? Well, I mean, it's Globes gonna Globe, even during a pandemic, because probably Sia got on a Zoom with every Globe voter.
Yeah.
And sent them a Vimeo.
Yes.
That they didn't watch, but they got to chat with Sia.
I do feel like we as a culture, though, need to own some of this. One of which was, honestly, we had Hamilton Fever did happen. We did have a second wave of Hamilton Fever when it did premiere on Disney Plus. All those people who couldn't go to New York and see it on Broadway did see it. They did really like it. They found
I'm
a way.
Sorry, it's a TV movie. It's not.
It's 100%. It's not even a TV movie. It's a Broadway show that was filmed. It's a YouTube video. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not even a TV
movie. Right. And it's not like American Utopia was, where it's like Spike Lee is also implementing a vision on what this already pre-existing thing is.
But you know what?
You know.
The supply was limited and whatever. I will always hold it against this country that we fell for Borat again because it was an election year and it allowed everybody to sort of laugh at Rudy Giuliani. And listen, we all wanted to laugh at Rudy Giuliani. He would give us copious opportunities to do that in the months ahead. We didn't all have to pretend that Borat was funny again to do it. We didn't have to pretend that Maria Bakalova gave a lead actress worthy nominatable performance in this movie. Like,
we also didn't need to pretend that we needed this, that this movie was somehow necessary to show that these are awful people.
Right.
Like, we know that they're awful people. And at this point, like, it just wasn't funny to laugh at these people. Like,
I really,
like, it felt like a very dangerous time.
I've never felt more apart from so many people I like and respect in the culture. When I saw so many people being like, you gotta hand it to Borat, he's still got it. And like, I'm just like, am I taking crazy pills? Not to, again, use an overused cliche. Did I hate it? Oh, did I not care for it? And I think it's borne out in the fact that like everything I've seen Maria Bakalova in subsequently has been like, okay, but not impressive. Like, I don't understand why everybody who's like, oh, she was so funny in that scene with Rudy Giuliani.
They gave her
the
audacity points for the Giuliani.
For the Giuliani scene. And like, stupid.
It's also just a weird Globes that it's like, sure, they'll honor that there, but not there. Like,
can I read to you the six acting winners in movies from this year's Golden Globes? They were the deceased Chadwick Boseman, may he rest, Andra Day, Sacha Baron Cohen, Rosamund Pike, Daniel Kaluuya, and Jodie Foster. So of those six, only Daniel Kaluuya actually won an Oscar. Of those six, only three of them were nominated. It's just the weirdest, like, and again, but part, like, of it is Globes are going to glow. But like, I think looking back after a few years of hindsight, we can see that, like, Andra Day for the Billie Holiday movie is a weird win for to happen in that category.
I think she's great in that movie. I don't think the movie's very good, but she's great.
She does a very good job of making something out of that movie, but I don't think it nearly approaches what, like, Viola Davis is doing in Ma Rainey, or what Frances McDormand is doing in Nomadland, or Carey Mulligan in Promising Young Woman. Like, I just don't. It's a weird win.
I definitely think she's better than Carey Mulligan.
I think
of that list.
I think Carrie, there's been a real backlash against Promising Young Woman that I'm not saying is not genuine.
I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying, like,
I thought Carrie was
astounding. Fine.
Jodie Foster, I love to death, but like, that win for the Mauritanian is weird.
In her pajamas.
100%. Next to the woman that we didn't know was her wife, but is her wife. Like, fantastic. Other nominees also that year that didn't win, but this was the Jared Leto got nominated for The Little Things, that at this point
we've got to do an episode on The Little Things.
Helena Zengel from News of the World, a movie that, like, got so many nominations across that season and yet somehow doesn't exist. James Corden was nominated for Best Actor in a movie for The Prom.
I don't know how you nominate James Corden for that movie and not nominate Meryl Streep for The Prom.
It's, again, like, it's two different categories, and I get it. I know that.
Like, but you know that I'm well on the record of that type of mentality.
But it's still strange.
Like, when you have space for Kate Hudson,
it's still strange.
Music,
yes. Like, yes, you're totally right. So, like, just cuckoo bananas stuff happening all over that year. And, like, while still having the Alexandre Desplat was nominated for the Midnight Sky score.
Ugh.
Sure.
Full movie.
Tenet did get a nomination for score. Tenet, a better movie than 90% of the movies that were nominated for the Globes this year. So
I agree that it is more movie.
Tenet and Palm Springs, the two best movies of this Golden Globes lineup. Officially.
You just want to fight someone.
Officially. What a weird year. What a weird, weird goddamn year. So
they really did not have to nominate music.
They sure didn't.
All respect and love to Stewart, but then we wouldn't have had to watch this movie.
Yeah, I do. We love you, Stewart. And yet also, I texted you and I was like, what am I watching? It's genuinely horrifying.
Plotless. Like, I don't think that Sia understood. There does have to be a plot for a movie. Like, movies have to have a story happening where A happens, which leads to B happening, which leads to C
happening. Well, certainly with regards to music, that doesn't happen. I think with Zoo, it at least is like, she's whatever, 30 days clean or whatever, she's sober. She has to take care of her sister. She can't do it well. She's a drug dealer. Like, there's at least plot beats that are borrowed from 18 different, like, this is a very to Leslie kind of a story when it comes to Zoo, right? Where it's like, she screwed up so many times and nobody believes she can do it. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Kate Hudson deserves better.
About Kate Hudson.
She deserves better, and yet she gave worse in this. You know what I mean? It's like, she deserves better than this role, but it's not like she's good in this movie. And I think she's probably actively
I think this is maybe the worst performance I've ever seen.
Let's hope. Let's hope it stays that way. Let's hope nothing is ever worse than this. it's not the role I want for her. I hope that, like, I do hope that she at some point just realizes that she doesn't have to have this kind of a role in her arsenal to be a complete actress. You know?
Yeah. Though, like, you want to have the optimism for her being in another musical because,
okay,
listen, on the Patreon, we talked about Nine. I went to bat for her performance in Nine and for Cinema Italiano.
There is, I recognize and I celebrate your right to go to bat for her performance in Cinema Italiano. My version of that is her mashup of Lady Gaga's Americano and Jennifer Lopez's Dance Again on Glee. I wanna dance, hello, and dance again. I wanna dance, hello, and dance again.
Ah, America, Americano.
Her stint on Glee. That is my you know, when, like, get enough gay guys in a room at someone's house together and they'll
eventually
just, like,
someone's gonna talk about Glee.
No, someone's just gonna put on YouTube and start just, like, playing videos of stuff. And, like, that happened, and that was, like, the first thing I put on was just, like, oh no, we've got to watch the Kate Hudson mashup from Glee, because it's that good. And you know what it is, also on that list, Fergie doing Be Italian from Nine. So always a crowd pleaser. 100% always a crowd pleaser. Please talk about Kate Hudson's pop star career that seems to be happening right now.
I mean,
no, you sent me that video.
I'm not gonna say the mean thing, but I did send you the video. You called it a career. We love Kate Hudson. We love Kate Hudson. We don't want to drag Kate Hudson.
I will call Fabletics a career. That's...
Yeah.
She's an activewear designer. That's fine. Well, designer... No, that's not the right word. She's an activewear purveyor.
Yes.
That's
her
fine.
Her single that she released this year, it's called Talk About Love, though the lyrics are Talkin' About Love.
Do you think Celine got on the phone and got mad?
I'm not saying it was AI written, but I think that, you know.
Do you think that is that discrepancy the same as, like, Kate Middleton's, like, sleeve not ending in that photo, right? It's the equivalent.
The lyrics to this song, which we can't put in the audio now because Spotify keeps...
Yeah, Spotify's really on our ass, you guys. If you go back and listen to old episodes and you wonder why there are no song drops in there, that's why. Spotify is on our ass.
Yeah, we're going to start filtering in re-uploaded audio with no song cues in.
We thought we were within the realm of fair use, but apparently... Yes, yes. Apparently not. Anyway.
Apparently not.
But Gary, who is a lawyer, who is a copyright lawyer, get at us and let us know
if you want to take on big Spotify.
Yeah, if you want to take on big Spotify.
No, love Spotify. We love Spotify. Let's say we love Spotify.
That's true. We do love Spotify.
I am an Apple Music listener myself.
Wow, Chris.
Her song,
wow.
Talk About Love, which I watched on YouTube, not on Apple Music.
There you go.
It's a bad song. It is... Very vague lyrics.
Very.
She wants to be talking about love.
What did you say the music video looked like?
I said it looked like a medical commercial.
What are you not saying? The term?
I said it looked like a Descovy commercial.
It did. You're not wrong. We can say that. It's not like we're, like, doing ads for medication.
Or it's like moderate to severe plaque psoriasis commercial. It's like, it is definitely... It is like...
She's dancing for her Jardians. Is that what's happening?
The type of medical commercial where it's like, do you have hip and joint pain?
Right.
You should get on.
You won't.
Naya,
and you can dance about love. Yeah.
And you can live an active lifestyle and you're going to marry a European man. Like, that is what it is. It looks like that, but it also looks like What are those little, what are those ice cream bars? Not Godiva ones, but...
Klondike bars?
You know, the fancy ice cream bars.
Dove?
Like, it looks like a commercial for that.
Dove bars? Klondike bars?
Yeah, it looks like a Dove. It could
it's
be Dove for
Dove.
Bar. Or
oh,
for, like,
Dove dark
some
chocolate.
Type of fancy coffee creamer.
What are the ones... Okay, the fanciest ones with the worst name are Magnum, which are the ones that are
yes,
dipped in chocolate,
like a, that's
then
it,
dipped
Magnum.
In caramel, and then dipped in chocolate again. But they're called Magnum, so they sound like condoms, but they're like delicious right. chocolate ice cream bars. I have opinions. Yes, Kate Hudson's music
I
video looks like all of those.
I would endorse Kate Hudson, comma, pop star.
If Kate Hudson wanted to become like a pseudo like disco queen of the 2020s, I would support it.
Be featured on a Jessie Ware track. We would love it.
Totally.
Like but this
make
song
a
is
musical.
Not it. Like, I,
make a Studio
I was
54
like, why don't
musical.
I not even see, like, the deranged gaze going for this song?
Why isn't or, like, there a Studio
why
54
Why do I not even see people making
musical?
Fun of this song?
No.
It's because
it doesn't reach that level of notoriety, which is too bad.
It is kind of like a drag race. You said it was like a drag race verse.
Yeah.
Or no, was that?
No, I didn't, but I agree.
In this movie, the lyrics in Music, the motion picture. The time that I about threw my television out of my apartment and off of my balcony were the lyrics, humans, we're so insecure, but love is the cure. I wanted to write to Congress to make Sia songs illegal.
The titles of the songs in this film are O Body, Best Friend, 1+1, Insecure, Music, Beautiful Things Can Happen, Could I Love With No Fear, Easy, Music Again, Mountains, Music a Third Time, Together, and finally the closing credit song performed by Sia, Courage to Change. This movie was not good enough to best, what were the song nominees this year? There were
Husovic.
Some... Well, Husovic was a good one, but couldn't best the Diane Warren
Ladies
song from The Life Ahead, which was called IOC, YOC. Speak Now, the song from One Night in Miami, speaking of Leslie Odom Jr. The song from Trial of the Chicago 7. And that...
Who did that song?
Oh, God, don't ask me. Well, let's see. Who performed it? Let's see. Performers. Celeste?
Sure.
What you call it? Oh, and then the very, very, to me, very snoozy winner, which was Fight for You from Judas and the Black Messiah, as performed by her, as written by her also, because she did win the Oscar for it.
A sign, I think, that that movie was gaining strength that it won that category.
Probably. What do you think it came close to winning any other awards? It only won the Kaluuya Award, right?
Yes, but I mean, I think if that movie did have maybe a little bit more time, especially in this season, I think you would have been looking at more nominations for that movie.
Sure.
I would like to believe that Sean Bobbitt had mm-hmm. was very close to winning cinematography.
I feel like that screenplay award was pretty up in the air, too, between Promising Young Woman, Judas, Minari. Like, I feel like any one of those could have won that. Whereas, like, adapted screenplay felt it was like The Father versus Nomadland, and that was pretty much it. God, Borat got nominated for screenplay, too. I remember because, like, all of those, like, 12 different writers for that movie. I remember having to, like, double check that none of them had ever been nominated before because I was trying to do Oscar firsts that day. Oh, God.
Weren't you, Katie, and I quizzing each other semi-recently about the pandemic Oscar nominations of which ones we'd memory hold?
They're so, like, what is the most memory hold movie from the pandemic Oscar? Like, that is
The Midnight Sky.
Oh, that's what we were talking about, right? It is
period.
Yes, except I also, what did I say? I had another option. Mine was what the hell was it? Give me a second to look at these, because, like, it wasn't News of the World, even though I think News of the World
was it the one and only Ivan?
No, I think that was... No, my choice was Greyhound, which was a Best Sound nominee. The Tom Hanks as the submarine captain, Apple Apple TV Plus movie, Greyhound, that was my choice. But, like, you had so many options. You had the Pinocchio, the
multiple nominations for that.
The Matteo Garrone Pinocchio, which
people
I...
People actually kind of stood up for
I loved that one, but, like...
I think we're just a little starved.
No, I thought that was so weird and so unsettling in a way that, like, I preferred it to the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio, to be honest. Do you believe we've gotten three Pinocchios in the last, like, 4 years?
We're going to get more, probably.
Probably.
Did you hear Sia's making a Pinocchio?
Stop it. Stop. You'll speak that into being. No, Katie's choice was the Mulan remake, which got released the weekend of the pandemic shutdown. Like that, or premiered.
I think it was the weekend after the shutdown.
It had premiered in LA, but it didn't release. And so then they pulled it at the last possible second. And then fretted for months about how they should, whether they should release it on VOD or not.
I couldn't believe that Quiet Place 2 spoilers never really got out there, considering it had screened.
Yeah, that's true. Quiet Place 2, good movie. We are having a bad week for this. Love and Monsters.
Listen, this movie made us combative.
Love and Monsters, another very forgotten movie by most people, although I remember that movie probably a little bit more than most. News of the World, as I said, we've all tried to push hillbilly-ology out of our minds, but in our minds it remains. What were some of the, like, animated feature? What are
they? A Shaun the Sheep movie, Farmageddon.
Sure.
Good movie.
That was cute. Oh, Over the Moon, not a very good movie, and that was a nominee. That'll be the one I always forget.
Onward sucked.
Onward. Oh, Onward, right, with the lesbian troll cop. That's right. Remember
the meme going around of the lesbian troll,
yes,
the one-eyed lesbian troll cop, and it was just like her with her eyes closed, and then it was just her eye opening with the RuPaul's Drag Race rattle.
This is so stupid. And yet, can I tell you? One of the best animated short lineups in my memory that was won by, like, the worst one, but that was the year that it was both.
Well, yeah, because Opera's one of the shorts, and that short rules.
Opera and Burrow, my two favorite short animated short nominations from the last, like, 10 years were that year. I loved Burrow so much.
Everybody wants a bathroom. Disco.
Everybody wants a little bathroom in their little dream Burrow, and I loved that bunny so much. Just wanted a room of one's own, and I appreciate that. Opera ruled. Opera fucking ruled. So, listen, it wasn't all bad that year.
Opera was, like, the best nominee of that whole Oscar
year. Kind of, yes. It was. I think it was in my top five when I ranked them all, because what was my number one that year? Minari might have been my number one that year. I should see that movie again. What is he doing now, Lee Isaac Chung? Twisters? Twisters.
Twisters, baby, Twisters.
We'll be two for two, Minari and Twisters.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait. Anything else?
I remember being so bummed that was his movie. I was like, no, he's too good for IP. Don't do this to our great American.
And now we're like all hotties Twisters.
Yeah, and we're like, fuck yeah, get Lee Isaac Chung paid. And, like, it looks like it's fun.
I can't.
Well, but it also looks like, you know, maybe he was a smart choice for this movie, too, because it's like, obviously he knows how to film the American landscape, but also, like, the character dynamics in this movie look like they could be really fun and really smart.
If they bring back Lois Smith as a feisty granny like they had in Minari, you know, could all work. It could all work out.
There's going to be another scene at drive-ins, except everybody at this drive-in is going to be watching what? Tenet. Because that was the, remember, like, the year, the time of pandemic,
yes,
and, like,
drive-ins came back were, yeah. I never partook, but I all power to people who did
either. Because the thing about drive-ins in the summer is, like, the movies don't start until really late, and I was like, even in a pandemic, I don't think I could stay up that late.
I think, you know, just to sort of close things out, the five best movies of 2020 were Palm Springs, Tenet, Burrow, Opera, and Music. And only Music was shut out of the Oscars entirely. So, or no, Palm Springs wasn't nominated either. It should have been. Alas.
Music is the worst movie we've ever talked about on this podcast. It's not even fun to talk about. And like thinking of the listeners who go, who like watch the movies before we do.
Yeah,
them,
this isn't Cats.
I feel really bad.
This isn't Cats where it's going to be like, oh, it's so terrible, but like hooting and hollering. There's no hooting to be had. There's no hollering to be found. There is.
No.
There is.
There's just shock that this exists and is allowed to exist very publicly on like Peacock right now.
Yeah, very publicly.
Sia, in the tradition of, I would say small tradition, of musicians who decide to make movies like Prince, Madonna, Fred Durst.
Stop it with Fred Durst. I'm going to murder you.
Fred Durst has made multiple movies.
I know he has. I know
Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie. Respect to Rob Zombie. I may not like all of his movies, but like he has an enthusiasm for it, and I respect
it's
that.
It's worked out best for Rob Zombie than it's worked out maybe for anyone. Who am I forgetting that it would, that there might be?
Yeah. Has Mick Jagger ever directed anything?
No.
I feel like he was in a bunch of movies. I feel like Bowie could have directed a good movie when he was alive.
Bowie did like long form.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you could say it's worked out best for Questlove with Summer of Soul, and Questlove got an Oscar.
I mean, do you count Barbara? Not really, right?
I guess Barbara. I mean,
that's
I guess
a gray
you're
area.
You're thinking of it's. I mean,
she was always an
technically
actress.
Was a pop singer at the time. It's just pop music is not the same,
but she was always an actress, you know what I mean? It wasn't like she was ever an actress.
Yeah,
I don't know. You know who should direct because she's not making music is Rihanna.
I mean,
Rihanna directed a movie.
I would trust it. The tradition of this is not a lot of good movies.
No.
And you know, movies that do get really aggressive.
Yeah.
Justified or not, you know. Have you ever seen WE?
Oh, yeah.
We should do an exception on WE.
We absolutely will be doing an exceptions on WE at some point. Yes, 100%.
But, like, people had their knives out for that movie that, like...
Yeah.
I don't know if it needs that much.
No, people were extra...
Music does. Music absolutely deserves
it. Music is so much worse than WE. Like... W.E. at least is like Oscar Isaac. What do we think? Like that for that alone.
Abby Cornish in like lingerie, like stalking her husband through their home, being like, why won't you have sex with me?
Save it for the Patreon.
On another planet.
Save it for the Patreon.
It's a functioning movie.
Yeah.
Music is not a functioning movie.
No, it's really not.
Released by Vertical Entertainment. We don't really ever talk about Vertical Entertainment because so much of it is like it gets an obligatory theatrical release.
Right.
You know what they will be releasing this year?
What?
In partnership with Roadside Attractions, like a lot of their releases. They got Lee. They're going to
oh,
be distributing
no.
Lee.
Kate Winslet and
this
Lee.
September.
Wow. A year after it played at TIFF to no response. Sad.
Not a good sign.
Not a good sign. All right. Do you want to tell our listeners what the IMDb game is?
Yeah. Every week we end our episodes with the IMDb game where we challenge each other with an actor or actress to try to guess the top four titles that IMDb says they are most known for. If any of those titles are television, voice-only performances, or non-acting credits, we'll mention that up front. After two wrong guesses, we get the remaining title's release years as a clue. That's not enough. It just becomes a free-for-all of hints.
That's the IMDb game. All right, Chris, you get the option of guessing first or giving first.
I'll guess first this week.
All right, so mine comes with a little bit of a mini game before it, which I think is a little fun.
Okay.
One of the films that Kate Hudson was in her illustrious career thus far, has been the Gary Marshall. Was this Gary Marshall's last movie? Mother's Day.
Mother's Day?
Yes.
Yeah, that's, I believe, Gary Marshall's last movie.
All right, Gary Marshall's final movie, Mother's Day. Now, that is a movie where there are four performers pictured on the poster. Can you tell me who those four people are?
Hudson...
Yes.
Julia Roberts, Jennifer Aniston, and I think the fourth is a man. But it's not like Bradley Cooper.
You're right about the other three.
Owen Wilson?
It's not Owen Wilson, but you're right about all of the other things.
I don't think I've seen Mother's Day.
Chris, do yourself a favor.
I know.
You also didn't mention that it's Julia Roberts in the most insane wig you've ever seen.
The most fuck-ass bob you've ever seen.
Yes.
Losing the bob off.
All right. So the person you are missing is the person who I am giving you the IMDb game for. It is Jason Sudeikis.
Sudeikis is on? And why would we put Sudeikis on posters for movies?
Because he's the fourth main cog of that movie. Or,
so how much TV is
one there? Television.
Ted Lasso.
Correct.
What movies do I think he's in that could show up here? He's in a lot of like comedy character actor roles, but nothing's coming to mind that he's the lead of. Sudeikis is in. Do I think Mother's Day is there? He's on the poster. I'll say Mother's Day.
Incorrect, but smart guessing.
Right. Because he's quite possibly. What's another, like, dude comedy that he's in? Or not dude comedy? It's conceivable he's in The Big Short, and The Big Short seems to show up for everyone. Oh, Sudeikis is hard, because Sudeikis is one of those, like, that guy actors when he's not on TV, so he's in a million different things. Ugh. Is he in something like Downsizing? I'm just gonna say that it is, why can't I say a damn movie? Sleeping with Other People, because I know.
No, but that's a good guess. That is incorrect. So your years.
Yeah, I just want my years.
Your years are 2011, 2013, 2016.
Okay.
I will also say, as a manner of hinting, he is no lower than third build on any of these.
Got it.
In fact, he's first build, second build, third build on in each.
We're the Millers.
We're the Millers is the one where he is first
build. I should have guessed that already.
We're the Millers shows up quite a bit, actually, on IMDb game. It's pretty popular.
Right. I think it showed up for Aniston.
Yeah.
That is 2013?
Yes. Okay. 2011 and 2016.
I'm also, like, everything that's coming to mind, I'm like, not Sudeikis, that's Ed Helms. Like, I just thought of the Vacation remake.
Right, not Sudeikis, that's early Bradley Cooper.
And they're really not similar actors, is the thing.
Right.
It's just, like, you could put them in each other's roles somehow.
Yes, you could.
He's never done Marvel. I don't think he has a franchise. 2011... is like, what were the comedies that year?
Early teens comedies are like a black hole for me. I genuinely, like, I have such a hard time remembering them.
I don't think he's in an Apatow that he would show up for.
Want some other clues?
Yes, I want more.
So the one he's third build for, he's on the poster for. The one he's second build for, he's not on the poster for.
Okay.
The one where he's third build, he's one of six people on the poster. Each of them sort of in corresponding pairs based on
is the Couples Retreat
title. No, but again, like Couples Retreat, these pairs correspond to the title.
Yeah. That's way too high billing to be like, he's just not that into you.
Also, one of the people on this poster was on the poster for one of the other movies that you've already guessed.
Aniston.
Yes.
So it's another movie with Sudeikis and Aniston.
Although they don't correspond to each other, weirdly.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's also one incredibly canceled person on this poster. One who had an Oscar nomination last year. two who
is
come
like
from
Valentine's
television
Day?
Comedies. No, not Valentine's Day. I think this movie had at least one sequel. There's a chance it might have had two sequels, but I think it had at least one sequel.
Oh, God.
Is
it like a Valentine's Day, though, where it's like, or it's like a Love Actually type of, here's
no, it's not stories. like a, what's the one with the office Christmas party? It's not like that.
Got it.
Although, that...
Is the incredibly canceled person James Franco?
No. Older.
Okay. Older. Johnny Depp?
Little older.
Really? Okay, so...
Incredibly, very visibly canceled.
Mel Gibson.
No.
Oh, boy. Getting all the people that have done bad things.
Like, very... There was a whole story about it, written by a former guest of ours. Every year he...
I mean, I...
Every year he comes out with some...
Kevin Spacey.
There you go.
Spacey and Sudeikis were in... Oh, God. It could be... Is this the one where it's like people are paired off?
Sort of. It's like three guys who are friends who, like... Hatch a scheme.
Horrible Bosses.
There you go. Horrible Bosses.
Oh, God. That was his franchise, and I absolutely intentionally forgot those movies because I only saw the first one, and it was God.
I haven't even seen the first one. All right. So your last one that you're missing from 2016, it played...
He's not on the poster.
He's not on the poster. It is the lead actress and something else are on the poster.
The lead actress in something else, a secret third thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it an animal?
No.
Is it a mystical creature?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, mystical. Yeah, it's a creature.
Is this IP?
No, but it's sort of playing at that.
Right. It's not like, it's not like Garfield, but it's like a talking cat.
Not quite. Let's see. The pull quote at the top of the poster says, "Thrilling, funny, original, an instant classic." Sudeikis' name is above the title, even though he's not on the poster. This played a festival that I was at, and then I don't know if you were at this one.
Toronto. I was not at Toronto in 2016.
Right. I definitely saw this movie there. I really liked it. A lot of people really liked it. It showed up on some top 10 lists, but it was never really like a contender for Oscars.
Oh, is it Colossal?
It is Colossal.
Right. I forgot that he's the guy in Colossal.
He's very good in Colossal.
Colossal is in anyone's.
I know. He's very good, I think, in Colossal, though. I think it speaks well of the known four game for that. So, yes. Good job. You figured it out.
Not so good job. This is one of the worst I've done in a while.
Okay. Well, I was being nice. All right. What do you have for me?
But thank you. So I went into the various filmographies of movies directed by musicians, and I'm pulling someone who we have previously done on the first time we ever did the IMDb game on this show, not from our first episodes, but close to it, from Under the Cherry Moon, directed by Prince, Kristin Scott Thomas.
Oh, my. Okay. Kristin Scott Thomas, The English Patient.
Correct, her Oscar nomination.
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral, yes, okay. Correct.
Gosford Park, I've learned
Gosford
a lesson.
Gosford Park shows up for everyone. You're very close to a perfect score. I don't think you're going to get the perfect score, though.
It's I've Loved You So Long?
Incorrect.
Okay. It's
in the French language. I've Loved You So Long. Sony Pictures classic film.
Is it Confessions of a Shopaholic?
Also incorrect. Okay. Your year is 2013.
KST 2013. What was going on in 2013? It's a movie I've seen.
I believe you've seen this movie. I saw this movie in a theater, and she is, in my opinion, the only good thing about it.
Oh, okay. Is it like, why is Kristin Scott Thomas in this movie? Is it one of those?
100%. But then from her performance, she shows you why she's in this movie.
Okay. Is it like a like an action movie or like a disaster movie?
No.
Is it like a multiplex movie?
No.
Oh, is it the Ryan Gosling thing? Only God Forgives?
What's it called?
Is it Only God Forgives?
Only God Forgives.
Wow. No, I have not seen Only God Forgives.
She is a hoot in the movie. The movie is not good.
Every scene I've seen from that movie, I'm like, oh, I don't want to see. She's sort of like dolled up like Donatella Versace, right?
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She's having a wild time.
Oh, I wanted to get a perfect score on KST. Okay.
I'm sorry. Maybe we need to make it a goal to get a perfect score again.
I like when I said disaster movie and you were like, well, it's a disaster of a movie.
No, you said action movie. And I was like, no.
What is the actual action? Is he like a John Wick type? Is he like an assassin?
There's not enough happening for him to be like a John
Wick.
I'm
so glad we've made it to this portion of Ryan Gosling's career through that portion of Ryan Gosling's career. Like, I'm glad we made it through the storm.
I know that it's supposed to be good and fun, but this stuntman movie.
I've turned the corner to optimism. I was so against it because I had seen that trailer for months in front of everything.
The trailer is not good.
And I was like, good Lord, stop it. And then I was like, it is giving me a little bit of Nice Guys vibes. And I love the Nice Guys. And I'm going to give it a shot.
It's giving me Ryan Reynolds. And that's what's off.
Oh, that is unkind.
It feels like a Ryan Reynolds
movie. No one deserves that, Chris. No one. All right. We'll banish that from our thoughts and hearts.
And now that we've talked about this movie, we can banish it from the face of the earth.
Music? Yes. Bye, music. Bye, Diva.
Bye, Pumpkin.
Bye, Pumpkin. That is our episode. If you want more of This Had Oscar Buzz, you can check out the Tumblr at thishadoscarbuzz.tumblr.com. You should also follow our Twitter account at @had_Oscar_buzz, our Instagram at thishadoscarbuzz, and our Patreon. Wow. I had a little Kate Hudson hit a high note there. At patreon.com/thishadoscarbuzz. Chris, where can the listeners find you?
Twitter and Letterboxd at Chris V. File. That's FEIO.
I am on the socials, including Letterboxd at Joe Reed. Reed spelled R-E-I-D. We would like to thank Kyle Cummings for his fantastic artwork, Dave Gonzalez and Gavin Mevious for their technical guidance, Taylor Cole for our theme music, including a pinch hit in our Patreon episode recently that just beat the band, was beyond the pale, Taylor Cole. Worth the price of a Patreon sign up just to hear what Taylor provided for our Oscars review episode. Listeners, please remember you can rate, like, and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. A 5-star review in particular really helps us out with Apple Podcasts' visibility. So please quit beating the shit out of Henry Rollins. We didn't really talk about that. Kate Hudson beating the shit out of Henry Rollins in the hallway, and write something nice about us. That is all for this week. But we hope you'll be back next week for more buzz.
Bye.